If Murray has supported the show, I'd be less sick of podcasts.
The Blubbity Blah.
Sending out good vibes.
Good vibes. Underneath breaths of deep gratitude and prayers for guidance and protection. And put on a didgeridoo and shamanic drumming track. Shivers or vibrations and stuff like that.
Okay, guys, welcome back to the Grand America Show, back to your regular scheduled programming. After last week was, of course, the Grimoire launch party. We hope you guys enjoyed that. We hope you checked it out.
Oh, we're live.
That's not good. It says the platform's dropped, so that is good. I better check Restream, though, just in case. But we're all back. People did the audiobook. The Grimoire did do a great launch. I must say it seemed to do quite well. I think we're almost at 200. Oh, look at that. It is, but we're not streaming anywhere. All the streams are shut off. So I believe that we are good. I think I can't stop it because you know, what's interesting though, is it just worked to restream. It's going to Restream right now. If I just turned on YouTube, it would go to YouTube.
Oh, we are on locals, it says still, but I'm going to shut it off and stream.
Anyway, all that to say, we're chatting with Helen Lervetsky this week. It's a good show. There's always a timestamp in the show notes if people want to skip ahead to that, but been a busy podcast day here. Frustrating projects around here. I got to say that one old boat rips, dude, that push button 1972 jobby. What are the chances both those motors would end up being from 1972?
The red one?
The red one has a 40 horse Evinrude on it from 1972. And the orange one has a 65 horsepower push button Shift-O-Matic Evinrude from 1972.
Cool.
But the 65 rips, dude. Like purrs like a kitten. I took it out the other day with Shauna, and it's just hurt, no problems. Reverse, offload it, start it, drive around. It's like, you know how outboards are. There's always something. But that thing just worked, man. Did 30 miles an hour.
That's good.
Yeah, so that's like, what, 48 kilometers an hour? Crappy old boat. Like I said, that's probably the last boat of the year. I'm going to maybe get some ice fishing shacks going. I've been thinking about that.
Oh.
There's a bunch of super cheap pallets of material in the auction. Like a pallet of 2x4s for like $75 was the last time I checked. But you could use to whip up a couple of shacks. Maybe go just park them on the lake and try and rent them out all year like Buddy was doing in Brooks, but do it at the other lake.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, something to do in the winter. The winters get old. Yeah, you're in the thick of it in Saskatchewan now. I mean,
oh yeah, yeah. Even this dude, this August has been cold. It's been 20. It's just 20 degrees. Last couple of weeks just gets to like it's cold in the morning. Gets to 20, 21. That's it.
Yeah, it's like it was like here for like a week and a half. I mean, they were saying it's supposed to go down to zero overnight here next week sometime, but then it got warm again. Now it's been like high 20s.
I think it's supposed to be
27 tomorrow.
But the summer's slipping away. I don't even know if I'll make it out camping. I mean, I'm having major issues with my project, so I don't even know if I want to talk about it. I want to talk about it, but I don't want to talk about it. Because I don't think we've talked about the fixing up the camper and stuff yet. Because last week we had that whole Grimoire kickoff episode. And then, so we didn't really do an intro last week.
Yeah, it's turned into a debacle over there, right? I mean, my boat that I bought for myself has turned into a debacle too. It was a steal of a deal, and now I can't get the motor to turn. So it's seized. Yeah. I've had it soaking and everything for a week, and it won't go. still trying, but now I'm at the point now where I'm actively like poking around for a replacement motor. Because that's starting to seem like less work to just change this motor out, which I mentioned to you, and you were like, well, do you want to do two?
I don't even know if I want to go there. I mean, mine's much newer. It's like 2015, and it's still, I'm having problems with that too. I mean, it's unbelievable. So it's three motors now for vehicles that have had 2012, 2014, 2015, not all mine. Like one was my stepson's, but
you could also add the other one to the list, right? The Lexus.
Well, I did. That was 2012. Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. So it's weird, right? Three motors. Are you kidding me? They just don't last anymore. That's it.
Well, this one ain't even fair though. I mean,
no,
I don't know all the details about the steps, but this one, you just sort of went and bought, but he just sold you a shitty truck. I mean,
I'm going to take it back to him. So I don't want to get too into that right now, to be honest. That's like the fresh one, but the camper one. So I went and turned the water on, right?
Yeah. Cause last it was good news. He had gone through all these trials and tribulations and things were looking up.
Turn the water on, the shut off valve, I broke the handle off. Now, I don't know if that has anything to do with the leak. So, because you can put the handle back on and turn it around, right? And I thought, oh, this is okay. It still works. Just put the handle on, turn around. But the valve popped out the other way. So I don't know if it was broken before I broke the handle off or not, but that was leaking. So we had to take out that whole assembly with the three shut off valves and all the elbows. What?
It's almost like a little manifold looking thing.
The plumbing?
Yeah, with a bunch of stuff coming off it.
So then we replaced the taps were so bad that we had to replace the two faucets, so we bought cheap faucets, like $30, $50 faucets for the little bathroom, then the kitchen, and we replaced those. And then we had the pump working, but then it started leaking, so we had to reattach the pump a couple times. Anyways, it all seemed to be working. The tank was filling. I was switching it from the city water to the tank water and all that, because this is all fairly new to me. And then I realized that the tank's draining. So the tank's not draining. And I found a little, like it sort of leaks out. And I thought that might be the overflow. Like if you can keep filling the tank, it's just going to start overflowing, right? And then I realized, no, the real overflow is out the back. And this one is just a little plastic tube sticking out. So I plug that just to test it. And it seemed to stop leaking, but the next day tank's dry.
So where did all the water go?
In the yard.
In the yard, not in the trailer?
Yeah, it's leaking out the bottom. Like, and I could see the dripping out of the bottom, right? You can see it coming out. But when I put that little plug in it, I thought
the tank's cracked.
It's still coming out somewhere. Yeah, it's still
Doesn't the city water bypass that tank?
Yeah, yeah. The plumbing, like I can get the plumbing to work, but I couldn't. If I didn't have a connection to water, I'd have a problem.
Does it need a new water tank?
I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with it. I mean, maybe it's a connection to the water tank that could be fixed. Like, I don't know where the leak is. So now I got to take the.
But isn't so? Is the water tank underneath the floor?
Yeah. I have to go underneath the thing. Probably jack.
At least it ain't flooding your shit.
Yeah, I mean, there's little leaks inside there because the pressure, like, if I don't release the pressure, it'll start leaking inside. If it's
you know what you got to do is you got to get a pressure regulator. You hook it up before your RV and it only allows a certain amount of pressure into the RV system.
Well, it's fine if it's on the city thing, but it's just that when the tank's full, if I don't have the nozzles open and the tank's full and the water's going through, it's going to start leaking in places.
Yeah, that's not good.
And then the propane sensor is broken. I think that's just going off now. I think I had a propane tank stolen out of it. I thought there was two tanks there, so I went and bought another propane tank, $127, fixed that, hooked that up, seemed to be working okay. And the propane sensor is going off. So I think it's a broken sensor. The thing's so old that it's probably just not working anymore.
You can get one on Amazon for like $40 at 12.
Yeah, it'll be cheap to put that in. And I should do that just so I know that.
But you're not suffocating?
Yeah.
Yeah. That,
so hopefully there's no, hopefully there's not a real leak. I don't think there is because I'd smell it.
You should smell propane. Yeah, that you should smell it. Down by the floor. I think propane's heavier in there, right?
So. It is. It goes down. That's where the thing is, down by the floor. Yeah.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So still working on that and then working on the truck. So, yeah, I don't think I'll be going anywhere. I mean, it's part of me is having fun with it, but part of me is getting to the point where, oh, my God. So you fix all these things and it's still not working. And it's like,
it gets old.
It gets old. To
the point where it's just like, I've had enough of this thing.
I fixed the electrical. Oh, the electrical's fine now. It's working. Got a new adapter and that was all it was.
Converter?
No, just an adapter.
From 110 to 12?
110 to 30.
Oh, the plug-in, you mean?
The plug-in adapter. Yeah, not a converter. The converter's working fine. The batteries are charging and yeah.
Well, that's good.
But it is weird because the 94, like it's, the thing is, there's not a lot of information about the details of it, right? Like there's probably very few of them left, people using them. And even the manual is so vague. The manual, I found the manual, I was reading, I downloaded a manual for it and it's just like, it really doesn't tell you much at all.
That's funny because that's kind of the opposite thing that I find with a lot of these old outboard motors. Yeah. When I pull the manuals, these online manuals will have like the engine sort of split up into compartments and then a complete blowout of each compartment with all the parts and like dotted lines to exactly where they go. So you can see the like order of operations for all these parts, exactly where they go, where all the wiring goes. I mean, some of these manuals, it's funny because they're from the 70s. So you go through them and they're like telling you all this crazy stuff, like how to rebuild the starter and all this. And I'm like, man, none of this stuff would be ever be included in today's manual. Just be like, call us. Just call us, buddy. Just call us. This is like complete teaching you how to completely break down the motor and rebuild it.
Yeah.
In the manual. Yeah. Nowadays, the manual is like, just call Mercury, buddy.
Yeah.
Pay us $200.
And then you can't get a hold of them anyways.
Yeah, or they charge you like $600 an hour or something like that.
Yeah. Well, so we should probably mention a little bit in a little bit more detail, get away from my trials and tribulations, but about the grimoire, like the book club, it's really going good. School.com/audiobooks. I'm going to start reading a book in there soon. Probably put a little poll in there to see what book we start reading, but you just added 10 awesome books into there.
Is it the 20th then? Is that when you're doing the reading?
I don't know. I'm going to look at the full moon. It's a full moon. It's the full moon. Yeah, we're going to split it up that way. So
let's see what the calendar says. The calendar says it is, it was today. No, that's the chapter check-in, and that was yesterday. Today's the 18th. So
I thought, 10 new titles. There it is. So Isis Unveiled. Volume 1, Volume 2, Ragnarok, The Age of Fire and Gravel by Ignatius Donnelly, Prehistoric World, Vanished Races, E.A. Allen, The Book of the Damned by Charles Fort, The Tao Te Ching by Lao Tzu, Maxims of Tahotep, and then The History of Magic, Volume 2, Anna Moser, The Symbolism of the Tarot, Ouspensky. Wow, that's a good addition to the book club. Friedrich Bastiat, The Law, and that's all 10. Awesome.
So it was the 27th. That's the full moon, and it's in the calendar for the live chapter reading. Of course, that is available over at school.com/audiobooks.
Yeah. We're trying to get to 200 members. It's free. You can go in, get free book of the month, The Secret Teachings of All Ages. What would you call it? It's an abridged version of that. It's like a 4.5-hour book, like a summary of it, which is, it's pretty dense in depth and deep already, but it's there. And you've also got PDFs in here now too, which is great. So that's available for free for people. Just sign up and get a free book of the month.
And there's a whole discussion course moving around. It's probably our most active community suddenly.
Mm-hmm.
The people posting in there, it's all sort of gamified. So people can check that out, get free books. There's also the option to sign up as a founding member or as a, there's two levels anyway. There's $10 a month or $108 a year. That give you access to all 250 plus audiobooks and growing. We are still pumping those out. as well. So that is all coming, all ready to look forward to over at school.com/audiobooks. We got the best URL for audiobooks on school. So
yeah, that's great.
Share it with your buddies. You guys know what the library is. It's all just the super occult stuff. So
yeah,
very, very cool.
And then pegsandjokers.ca is our online free board game. It's like a card and peg board game. It's really fun, really well done. It's pretty easy to do, pretty easy to figure out how to play. It's like Sorry, but with a hand of cards instead. So you move your pegs around from your home around the board to your castle. There's little shortcuts and stuff. And you can bump your allies and your enemies. You can play 2-on-2 or against bots, or a team against bots, or 1-on-1 against the bots. So yeah, it's totally fun too. So check that out, pegsandjokers.ca. There's show notes. There's links to the show notes for both of those.
You can bump into Graham in the wild playing Pegs and Jokers. He's the most, if there was a leaderboard in there, Graham would be winning it.
I was thinking I got to just get a head start here on everybody.
As long as we're talking about that sort of stuff, there is still a couple of spots left for that tour. Starts in 12 days out of Buffalo, Niagara, Niagara Falls, checking out Niagara Falls and all that fun stuff. The Finger Lakes, Randall Carlson, going to be an epic time. So people can check that out. contact@thecabin.com/fingerlakes. Yeah, we just did the group call yesterday with Randall. It's going to be an exciting time. It's going to be a great trip. The Watkins Glen and a few of those places really do look amazing.
Oh man, people might fall in love with the east, back east there. That it is a totally different environment.
Yeah, I never been there. So I have been to the Canadian side of Niagara Falls once, way back in the day. And it wasn't for long. It was just a run in quick and run out. But I do vaguely remember it.
And it's not the same as Ontario in the north. Like, it really isn't, I don't think. It's a totally different environment.
No, it's like the edge of the Canadian Shield is what it seems like there, going into the Finger Lakes, just south of Lake Ontario. So that is going to happen. Of course, Randall's going to be there. Brad, the rest of the gang, check that out. It's going to be a good time. Should be good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Still some hunting spots left, too, if people want to come hunting. Tony and Johnny getting excited now. Mm-hmm. I mean, I shot an elk and an antelope the other day.
I thought I saw that.
Friday? Was it? I think it was Friday. I went out with Nate Dog and, went out in the morning. We were going to go down the hill looking for moose, but it was pretty greasy out there, so I didn't want to go down the hill and get stuck down there. But we did see a moose in the morning, probably like 20 minutes after first light, seen a moose at like 800 yards, but it was on some land I didn't have permission on, so we left it. We're going to head east to go looking south at Dinosaur Park. And we came out right on the highway, dude, came up to the stop sign. It's like, hey, wait, stop. So I just hopped out, shot the fucking thing right off the box of the truck.
No way.
Yeah, it was 230 yards or something like that off the highway. So it was, I think, 7:30. It was already gutted out. We were loading it into the truck.
Wow.
And then on the drive back, the rifle's still in the back. There's still some bullets in the clip. And there's this big antelope sitting there. Like, nah, but he's just not running. So I pull the truck over, run over the fence, and he runs 80 yards or so. So he's maybe 120. Just stops broadside. So I put one into him too. And then now it's like by 9 o'clock, I was on the way home with an antelope and an elk in the back of the truck. So elk was in velvet too. So nice, cool little spiker with some nice velvet paddles on it. Pretty cool. Got some steaks in the fridge, in the freezer. Got that all. I mean, we got it. It was the first time I've ever been able to, because we dealt with that whole motherfucker all in that one day. From like walking around to in the freezer, cut into steaks and all that sort of stuff. I haven't done the grinding yet. I got to do that yet, but I like to freeze it first. It's a little easier on the grinder if it's frozen. Otherwise, all the sinews and silver skin and that really clogs up the blades. It turns into a mess. I'll do that. And then I'll be, I got so much sausage to make. It's crazy. I got probably 150 pounds of sausage to make. Wow. I got all the stuff though. Now I got like the casings are in the freezer, and I got all the, went by the sausage place a couple weeks ago. So I got all the spices in there. I got everything I need. I just need to do it. But it's such a mission. It'll be two solid days.
I was just going to ask how many days. Yeah. Holy.
Yeah. Just the stages, you know, mix it all up. Some of it has to sit overnight. Some of it doesn't. Then you got to spin it all out in the sausages. That part, that, you know, it's really the packaging is probably the worst of it. You'd think it'd be the, but by that point, you're just so sick of it. And then there's just fucking sausages everywhere. And you got to, and it all, you know, you can get into the butcher paper for a little while and that gets old, and the vacuum packer is just kind of too slow and that gets old. But then you're done and you're good for a while, right? Like that's 2 months worth of meat in the freezer from the hunting on Friday, and it's just done in a day. There is a value to waking up Saturday morning and not having more work to do.
Yeah.
Which is usually what it is get into that other stuff the next day. At least this time of year when we can't, when I can't age it in another month and a half or two. I mean, it's tough in Alberta because it gets so goddamn cold at night and hot during the day that it's hard to find that fine line where you can maintain a temperature someplace to let it age properly.
Right.
I used to take it to the butcher just for that reason. Then I found out they were just freezing the fucking things, basically. So I just, what's the point on doing, what's the point on paying a premium for them to do that?
Yeah. Yeah.
I should buy a little truck and rent it out. A little refrigerated truck. Just call me up and go park it on the street outside your house for 5 days while your meat ages. Then you can even maybe have a little bench in the back so they can butcher it in there. I just drop off the truck and Uber home, Uber back when they're done, charge them a couple $100 a day, or I don't know, a couple $100 even. This is what I need to be doing.
They're pretty expensive, those trucks.
The reefer trucks? Yeah, probably for a working unit.
Yeah.
I did see some reefer stuff at the auction.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah. Dude, there's a 48-foot, there's a 48-foot semi-trailer.
No, a reefer?
Not a reefer, just a regular one with no wheels or anything, just like the container.
Yeah.
$7 went for.
If you see some reefers, let me know, seriously.
Okay.
I know somebody that's looking for freezer space.
Really?
Yeah. Potentially.
I almost sold that fridge I got at the auction for like $350, but the motherfucker never showed up.
That's the problem with today's marketplace.
You know what I got to do is I got to get Sean to bring it into the city and put it in his garage.
Yeah.
People could have the best of intentions until I put my address into the GPS. Yeah. And they're like, whoa.
Yeah.
That one.
Once they turn left on the dirt road, they're like, oh God.
That one that was $20 more, but an hour closer doesn't seem so bad.
Yeah.
But I digress. Well, we do need some people to support the show.
Yeah. .ca/support.
Of course, that's important. It's support has been down. It's a real shame. I hate to say it, but I mean, a bunch of people did go over and sign up for school. So not going to complain too much, but I'm just going back in the ranks here for the last 2 weeks. Not looking good, buddy. Oh, what do we got here? That's not it.
False alarm.
False alarm. We got one person to thank. Where'd it go? We got one person to thank. Better no people to thank. We were going to thank, actually, I think this is a monthly. But anyway, Free Range Foods, PTY, limited $50. That might be a monthly, but either way, thank you very much. Thank you for supporting the show. I mean, don't be a pleb. Stop being a pleb. Stop mooching the show. Head to grandamerica.ca/support today. Sign up for a monthly or make a one-time donation and I'll stab you. I'm just saying that because I have a knife in my hand, but I won't really stab you. But it would be cool for everyone involved. You'd feel better. We'd feel better. The show would be more secure. It would just be a wonderful thing all around. And you can check out the school. That's free. You can just go check that out. And the Tennessee Reset, we didn't mention that. That's another cheap to get in the door event. If you want to come to Tennessee with us, hang out with Brandon Powell, Mark England, that's coming up for the Equinox in Tennessee, in Sevierville, Tennessee. Airport is Knoxville. So looks like it's going to be a great one. We got some tickets moving on that. Some people kicking tires saying they're going to come. So why don't you come too? You got plenty of time. Save the money. You can get into that event for under $1,000. So let's do it. Let's hang out. Come hang out. All right. Well, do you have a bio?
I do. Yes. Helen Lavretsky, MD, MS, professor in residence in the Department of Psychiatry at UCLA, Semmel Institute for Neuroscience and Human Behavior. I'm just like a real short bio here because it's like a paragraph long, all the creds she has here. The leading geriatric integrative psychiatrist and a pioneer in mind-body approaches to late-life mental health. Yeah, it's a great chat. And her website is drhelenlavretsky.com. And the book is Living from the Soul.
Living from the Soul. That doesn't sound like terrible idea. Check that stuff all out, guys. Support the show. GrandAmerica.ca/support. Check out the new school.com/audiobooks. Most of all, enjoy the chat with Helen Lavretsky.
Helen Lavretsky, welcome to Grimerica. How are you doing? We're going to talk about your book, Living from the Soul. Your website is drhelenlavretsky.com. Oh, I think you're muted, or it's my...
Also funny. Me.
Something must have happened while we were setting it up there.
Happened fast, huh?
It happened fast. We did hear your voice
a second ago.
This is what happens. Yeah, we can't hear you, but it doesn't look like you're muted either.
She's on her FaceTime camera, so that might maybe, you know, but my Mac sometimes does is it like tries to connect to my phone all the time. It tries to think it's like smarter than me.
Oh yeah, right.
Your phone. We use your phone for the camera. It's like, no, I didn't ask you to do that.
All right. Well, let's see. We're gonna just talk and see if she comes back. I can mention a little bit about her book here. It's pretty fascinating. She's been involved in geriatric psychiatry, which is pretty interesting. Living from the Soul, the Neuroscience of Spiritual Awakening. I mean, she came from Russia in 1988. Her parents were both scientists. But she's involved in sort of bridging science and spirituality with Qigong and yoga and all kinds of stuff and the spiritual awakening. You're back. Awesome. Well, I was just reading a little bit about your book out loud. So welcome to the show. And this is going to be fascinating. Got your website and all that. Your book just came out, I guess, in July. How's it going so far?
I'm doing a lot of podcasts, so far, thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about you a little bit. Like, you came over from the Soviet Union in 1988, must have been right before that whole change to the States, right? And your parents were scientists, and then you sort of ended up bridging science and spirituality. So it's a fascinating topic that we've been talking about for years, but it's, I have never, heard about somebody using it in geriatric psychiatry, that kind of thing. So can you talk a little bit about your journey over here and how you got into this specific thing?
Right. It's been an unlikely journey, I have to say. So, you know, being brought up in the former Soviet Union, not much spirituality was allowed, you know.
Right.
So, but I was always a very spiritual psychic child and drawn to psychiatry because I could read people, basically. You know, I knew what they were thinking or feeling. And, you know, also helped that my parents and aunt and uncle were psychiatrists. So I started working in psychiatry when I was 15. I worked in a summer job in a psychiatric hospital. It was very fascinating for me. But I was also interested in hypnosis at that time. In high school, I did a school project, science project on hypnosis on my classmates and then phrenology. So everybody was fascinated. I read a book on phrenology and I did an experiment on my classmates. I measured their bumps on their head, you know, and I described their personality features. So I had both inclinations kind of together, you know, coexisting. It got facilitated, my professional merger basically got facilitated with my introduction to Kundalini yoga during family vacation, completely, you know, seemed like an accident, but it wasn't. So, and I got captivated by the practice and by the effects of Kundalini yoga. And shortly after I got introduced and trained in it, I entered teacher training. So I'm a certified Kundalini yoga teacher.
But when was that? Was that after you came over or was that in the...
This was when I was already here and developing my scientific profession. And, you know, I came to this country, to the U.S. when I was 25. And then at 42, I got introduced to Kundalini yoga.
Oh,
so I had a period of time when I was just developing my scientific, neurobiological profession. I'm a scientist primarily. Geriatric psychiatry was always of interest to me, older adults. And dealing with death and dying was like very much on my mind. As a child, I loved being in a cemetery. Like this was my favorite place to be. Because it was very cool and beautiful. You know, it was all the marble structures and statues and just very beautiful and poetry and, you know, just something about death and dying that always attracted me.
Wow.
Yes. And it continues to be so. And I find when people are dealing with mortality on their own or around them, they become better people and they're willing to change. So I work, for example, with older adults who are nearing end of their lives, but also with long COVID patients of all ages, 18 and up, and they have to deal with mortality all of a sudden and on. So, and they're willing to do absolutely anything, including being spiritual.
Yeah, yeah. So what was it like first trying Kundalini? Like, did you feel the power of Kundalini and that sort of was like, what? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it was an interesting story. I got introduced to that in a very spiritual island, Hawaiian island of Lanai. And it's really mystical, basically. And we were staying in this beautiful hotel that was under construction. And exactly like 15 people were staying there. And we had a teacher, young woman, coming from the Big Island to teach Kundalini yoga. And that was my first introduction. And what was beautiful to me was this nature of this island, being in a lagoon, basically three people, and this flow of energy that Kundalini yoga introduces you to, all together just was very magnetic. After I came back to Los Angeles, I had to find a class. I found a class in my former gym that was at 4 o'clock on Saturday, not the best time, but I was very committed. And what I noticed, even was once a week practice, my health started improving and my immune system, my sleep. And my according to my husband, I was a nicer person to deal with, you know. So then they discontinued that class and I had to find a new one. And I found a spiritual community in the Golden Bridge Yoga, which also became my home for training as a teacher trainer. And there I conceived studies because I was very, very curious about the effects of this yoga. But then I got enlightened in the process, you know, so I had a 6 months of temporary enlightenment state, and that was bewildering. That happened in 2007, a long time ago. And then I had no words to describe it. Yeah, I just didn't have vocabulary because I wasn't on PASS. And in Soviet Union, they didn't teach enlightenment, you know, or here too, you know. It's not easy to come across the language. And I mean, on some level, I knew what was going on. And I knew not to go to see doctors because I had a lot of physical symptoms like energy flowing and I couldn't sleep at all for 6 months. And when I closed my eyes, I had daylight inside and my pineal, I could see it in the mirror at night, you know, so everything was lit up. Literally, enlightenment means light. It's not mental, it's, you know, it's physical. And I consulted with my Kundalini yoga teacher who kind of gave me a basic understanding, but also provided me with practices that were grounding. And eventually I was able to handle this energy because my body or mind were completely unprepared.
Did you get that back at all?
Slowly what do you mean I got back?
Like you said, it was a temporary enlightenment, which was interesting.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't possible to function, like it was not sustainable. Right. And when people start waking up and they have this, in Japanese language, there's a word for this, satori, which means it's a temporary, but it happens a few times before you achieve a full one. And so, you know, it happens usually for people who are awakening. It's not one time. It's like gradual because human body is not wired to handle this much light. Right. So you have, and it was pretty rough. And so now I'm retracing my steps, making it a much nicer experience.
Interesting. So, and cause the subtitle of your book is about, where I'm just going to find it here. Where is it? The neuroscience of spiritual awakening. So you're kind of like took that experience in 2007. You're like, I want to study this and talk about the effects of this for people. It's so fascinating because you had that scientific background and now you've had this awakening that you can't describe.
Right. It took about 10 years to get full understanding and vocabulary, like wow. Language, how yeah. to describe what it is in reality. The reason I'm doing it now, one is world is ready to hear it because 20 years ago it wasn't ready. And a lot of people are experiencing it right now, you know, because there's a massive awakening going on, consciousness shift definitely happening. I can judge, I just thought, which was like completely unlikely scenario. I just came back from France. I thought that at the European Yoga Festival in France. And, you know, like thousands of people show up, you know. And even in the US, yoga classes migrated from 10, 20 to, you know, hundreds. And the spiritual groups that I work with, thousands at a time. And you probably have observed the same trend, you know.
Yeah, I did, but it seems to me like it's almost over the hump and it's coming back down now. I don't know if that's the case or if it's just like the milieu that I'm in now or we're in now, but I kind of went through my kind of yoga new age cycle, and now I'm, you know.
Well, it's kind of changed maybe in some ways. It's changed from like, because I don't know if you agree with this, Helen, but it seems like the result of all this sort of spiritual awakening and that sort of stuff that happened over that time period has turned into this new sort of awakening where we're sort of in this season reveal where all these sort of different, you know, control mechanisms and all this sort of stuff we used to take for granted is sort of spilling out onto the table is, you know, maybe you can't trust some of these people that we thought that we took for granted that we could trust for a long time. And I wonder if the awakening isn't sort of, if that isn't the result of a spiritual awakening, if that wasn't the inevitable next step.
Yes. So a few things are happening. the old programs and structures are kind of crumbling. And that includes spiritual and religious groups and formations. And they come to an end. Like I'm experiencing a few of those, you know, with including my Kundalini yoga community that went through a whiplash of breakup, you know. And another group I worked with for 13 years together, Mastering Alchemy, just came to an end.
Wow.
And that has to do with having to redefine what you do and how to do it. The purpose of these groups was to get us to this point. The other process, and that's what I'm explaining in the book, is how to depend on your own wisdom. So you stop depending on outside sources because they're so confusing and overwhelming. And there are so many programs and you don't know who to listen to and trust. So you have to turn within and use your own intuition. And that's what the book is actually teaching, how to go within and draw upon your own wisdom, your direction in life.
You're muted, Graham.
That makes so much sense. Yeah, that's really well said. So, Darren, did you have any follow-ups on that?
I'm curious because you talked about how it wasn't really how during the Soviet rule, it was sort of all the stuff was pushed under the rug. But what do you think happens to this? Because it's, I mean, obviously you've proved it. You went into it and it's there. This thing is there. It exists just below the surface. What do you think happens to this latent energy when it's, because it's already like, even over here in the West, it is still, it's not as popular as maybe as it could be. So there's still just some level of suppression, but it's there if you want to look for it and you can find it. But I'd imagine in the Soviet Union, it was almost impossible to find and wasn't there. So what do you think happens to these sort of latent abilities or energies when they're shoved under the rug and not allowed out? How do you think? Because I feel like those sort of things usually find a weak point and a pressure release and things like that. So I'm curious as to what that sort of, and you might have been too young to comment on it, but what those sort of differences were between the Soviet Union and the West at that time.
Am I understanding you correctly that you're referring to spirituality that was?
Yeah, like spirituality and these sort of like the Kundalini yoga and stuff like that is kind of proves that there's more to the spirituality than just there's something to it. And it's like innately there. So what happens when humans aren't allowed to express it?
They feel it, you know, so. Innate spirituality, it was underground. It wasn't official. You couldn't walk around with the cross, for instance, or go to church or synagogue or any other religious institutions. And but people practiced it. It was almost like oral tradition from grandmas passed on. It resurfaced after the fall of Soviet Union. And all of a sudden, they became very openly religious, including Vladimir Putin, who goes openly to church and crosses himself over before, you know. So, you know, and in the yoga community, there's a huge movement of Russian people. They're very attracted to spirituality, you know. And even within Kundalini yoga, like in this French, there was a huge delegation of Russian yogis. So, you know, it, they put a lid on it and people know what not to say, not to suffer. But then within them, they believe it, you know, and they practice it. And same as here. By the way, you know, just based on the numbers purely, in the U.S., 80% of the population consider themselves spiritual or religious. So that's a high number for Western countries. And that's not, it's getting down from 90, like 10 years ago, it was 90. Now it's dropping to 80. But here's what is happening. It's disillusionment with organized religion and transitioning into spirituality, which is could be nature or music or whatever, things that are bigger than ourselves, that is not following any tradition. That's also happening. And what is also happening is the shift. People are looking for alternative way of thinking or doing things, and they shift. If they were religious, they're now spiritual. If they're spiritual, they may be atheists. So there's a shift in gift in spirituality. The people are looking for a new definition.
Do you think people are becoming atheists? I feel like that's that might be the one example that
they could. Younger people.
I forgot about the younger generation. Yeah,
and it has to do with technology and AI and whatever else is going on in there.
Yeah, I like that. The mix is
culture and the milieu. It's like this weird because. I mean, again, I can't help but relate this back to the Soviet Union, because at that time it was the state that was trying to quash this thing, obviously, with a lot more force. But I do feel like there is a subtle push from the Western countries to sort of end this as well. I don't know if you would agree with that, but I feel like the governments aren't as cool with spirituality as they were, say, 50 years ago either.
Not in the state of Texas. They just adopted 10 commandments teaching in the school.
There's a couple of them that are like outliers for sure.
It's a similar problem when you're shoving your beliefs down the throat of many,
Aren't they also openly supporting mosques and the other religions in Texas too, though?
I'm not familiar with that. I'm just familiar with the
Ten Commandments. Yeah, I've heard there's been issues with, how many mosques there are now, and they seem to be open to all that too. So I get kind of confused with what's happening with Texas and religion.
The bottom line is that organizations are just crumbling, whatever structures exist, including the governments, are not very effective right now.
Yeah.
But what is happening is these people are opening up to their own wisdom, and that's where the soul comes in, because it's the soul that guides us. And the soul's wisdom, that soul is never a dying part of us, infinite part of us that belongs to Source, God, Creator. And that's a part of us that is connected. We're not disconnected from it. And a lot of people are turning to that. And my book is kind of introducing it. This opportunity goes through exercises that how to know your soul, how to get in touch, how to work with it. The one meditation that I did with hundreds of people, patients and caregivers and anybody who was willing to do that, was listening to the soul. And that I learned it during my Kundalini Yoga teacher training, and I adapted it to clinical use. And what it does in the 15 minutes is connecting you with your soul and facilitating it. And I ground people first, I expand them, and I'm helping them to talk to their soul and ask questions. And in the very end of this meditation, we ask the soul to give people a hug. And in that moment, most people cry or break down, they become emotional. And when I started noticing it right in the beginning, it was very striking, because why all of a sudden people are crying when they feel soul's hug? And in the beginning, it was dementia caregivers who felt very trapped in their lives, providing care for their relatives with dementia, and they felt alone many times. And so when I introduced that soul connection, I also invited them to feel this hug. And the reason they cried was the first time that they experienced this connection in their lives, and they might be in their 60s and 70s. And that was very touching to them, for them.
Wow. I was going to ask you about how do we listen to our souls? I mean, I know there's no real shortcuts, but is there any like tips? Because, a lot of it is negative self-talk and all this thoughts rushing through your head. And how do we differentiate or discern between like your actual soul talking to you and like just this like programming that we have, this subconscious programming?
Using your heart connection and not your mind. And some people are not sure whether they're hearing the answer. I ask them to use their intuition, the first thing that pops in their mind. Open their heart. And again, we do a lot of a bit of the preparation when they're not just in their physical body, they're a little expanded, they're grounded to handle it. They have to be, the only prerequisite for this participation in this meditation is to believe that soul exists. And in my practice, about 90-95% are open, at least open to that possibility.
What did your parents think about this shift in 2007?
Yeah, my mom thinks I'm completely crazy until this book came out. She can't grasp that, all of it.
Still? Really?
No, not open.
Mm-mm. Wow. And your dad, is your dad still around?
Yeah, he has not. I just started prayer when he died. I already was doing Kundalini yoga.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have stories about my father. You know, he was dead for 5 years, but I was still interacting with him.
Yeah.
He was still not finished with me.
Right, right. Was that through meditation or dreams as well? Or
In the dreams, yeah, mostly.
Yeah.
But also, there were some things happening that I felt his presence.
Yeah. Darren, do you have anything?
How does atheism fit into spirituality? How does it?
It's another requirement.
Is it? Can you unpack that a little bit?
Yeah, spirituality basically.
At all, are atheists in the audience on how they're actually spiritual?
It's their spiritual belief that they feel comfortable with, that God doesn't exist, and when they die, it's the end, you know, and that's also a spiritual belief. They may call it something else, but it's a point of view of how the world works. It's a spectrum of spirituality. That's their point of view on what does the world looks like? How does it operate?
Is that sustainable on a long term? Like, could you have a society that was completely atheistic? Do we have any of those throughout history? And do you think that that would affect, what sort of effects do you think that would have as a society, if we don't have that spirituality sort of baked in, that they seem to be sort of chasing us away from? And maybe it's not them, it's just technology that's chasing it away from us, but that it seems to be that this was a fundamental part of being human up till like 50 or 60 years ago.
Well, maybe the Enlightenment too. I mean, it probably goes back to the Enlightenment a little bit.
Or the 1800s. There's a couple points there. There's a couple pivot points.
Right. The science, when the science started rising, and materialism. But it was always duality, you know, like that's the world we're living in, is duality. Material versus non-material. It's harder to study. So, you know, I use all of the tools that I use. There are modern neuroscience tools like fMRI scans or blood tests are entirely dependent on our senses, you know, five senses that we have. So it's hard to, you know what, I have to reposition myself. Is that a problem?
No problem at all. No problem at all,
I'm just trying to work on my AC. So I'm just going to move.
Yeah, but that's an interesting question, Darren, because I don't think it's ever really, I mean, I don't think we've ever really seen the results of that, except for maybe how the West got very materialistic, but now we're coming out of it. I mean, I don't think it can be, you know, I don't think it can be held down, really, or it leaked out, like even in Russia, right? Russia was kind of atheistic for a while, and it still leaked out. People had their own underground kind of spirituality going on. I mean, is it even possible?
Well, yeah, and to that end, it seemed like Russia was better for it. So it seems like the atheism doesn't lead, I mean, better for the spirituality. It seems like atheism was maybe affecting some of that. And it's like, maybe that atheism doesn't lead to the Star Trek world that we've been sort of programmed to think it does. It just sort of leads to that hole gets filled by control somehow.
Right. I lived in both worlds, you know, atheists, and I wasn't overtly practicing anything. And I find living a spiritual life makes it much more meaningful and fuller, the life that I lead. And being guided by creator or source is much more satisfying. But also, you know, at this point, it's a very confusing point in history where we're trying to redefine ourselves as humans and as society. So people try different things, you know, and but a lot of them are awakening to their our divine nature.
But I think you mentioned the very important word of meaningful. I mean, meaning is what's missing in the younger generation too, I think. And I've sort of found that as well, that the spirituality gives me just the acknowledgement of something greater than myself does give me meaning.
Meaning and purpose is another way of measuring spirituality. So there are actually scales that go into measurement of spirituality.
Hmm.
So it's a spiritual construct.
Yeah, yeah. So what about the geriatric psychiatry? Like, what have you found has helped? Have you found that like this Tai Chi, this physical stuff as well, and yoga kind of helps people? What are some of the things that you found that help people? And can people kind of come back from getting into dementia or Alzheimer's, that kind of thing? Like, have you seen any kind of results on bringing people back?
Yes. So yoga, Tai Chi, the origin of them, especially yoga, has a lot of philosophy and spirituality behind it. It's not practiced in the American sports clubs, gyms. It's just an exercise, but even that can improve brain health and decrease stress level. And so these practices, mind-body practices, are mostly used to reduce stress and improve stress self-regulation. And being bombarded with so many mass disasters, I'm currently in Idaho, where fires are burning all around me, you know. And also, I mean, self-regulation is essential at this point. How do you even deal with this many mass disasters a day? And people are losing their homes, and all sorts of things are happening. Worse displacement. So having tools and yoga and Tai Chi and Qigong and breathing exercises, meditation, fall into this toolkit that one can handle on their own in order to come back in the body, be centered, and make rational decisions, you know. And I'll give you an example. It happened to me. I was facilitating a breathing workshop on January 8th, 2025, which was the day of fires in Los Angeles. And I couldn't leave that workshop for 6 hours because I was teaching it. And there were sirens everywhere, people screaming and evacuating, and all sorts of things are going on. And I can't leave. I breathe. I have to facilitate breathing. And it was an international workshop, and we were like relating what's going on around us to our international participants. So in the end, I was completely calm. Like, it didn't, so yeah, things are happening around me and people are screaming and running, but I'm calm. I came home and my husband was screaming and bewildered. And we had to put things together and evacuate, but I was completely calm. So it does work, even in situations like that when your life is threatened.
Yeah.
And
the decision-making, right? Like, you must be in a better condition to make logical decisions.
Yeah. So as far as Alzheimer's, my studies of yoga and others as well, other studies, show that yoga is a brain fitness exercise. It improves, increases brain connectivity, grows your gray matter volumes in different parts of the brain, translates into improved thinking or cognition, memory. But also reduces inflammation and reverses aging. So you can pull people back if they are experiencing subjective memory complaints, some concerns. We did a study in women postmenopausal with subjective memory complaints and cardiovascular risk factors, where we too demonstrated improvement in cognition and brain health. So brain health is something that is directly benefits, but also you can be more empowered by regulating your response to stress.
That's an interesting connection because, I mean, we're talking about geriatric people right now using it for dementia and things like that. But there's, I mean, you talked about young people and atheism, but there's also a huge uptick in mental health issues with young people. And we've been sort of just equating that to social media and all this other stuff. But Well, I mean, we've been dealing with new tech for a few generations, and it maybe hasn't been this apparent as it seems to be right now.
Yes, I do think so. There's currently five, never happened before, five generations living together in the same space on our planet. And that is because of increased longevity. And there's definitely an aging of the population happening of the workforce. And the pandemic did something for the minds of young people, you know, because the separation hasn't happened since or ever, so that the entire planet just stopped for 2 years. You know, nobody is going anywhere, not connecting with each other. That just was an experiment in social connectedness. In very young minds, it did something, you know, and they started depending on the social media and spending an enormous amount of time on screens. And, you know, you know this expression, Gen Z stare, when they stare at you as at the screen and they kind of glaring at you and not able to kind of regulate their social interaction. And that's the result of it, you know, because we had this experiment for 2 years on the entire planet. And but also in this five generations, resilience is the highest among World War II generation that is now dying out completely. And it's lower as you go in of subsequent generations, it declines. And the lowest is in Gen Z. And we don't know much about alphas who are very young right now.
Huh. What about with the geriatric people that are getting older? They think they're how much does your internal thought process affect your journey into dementia maybe not to Alzheimer's so much, but like, for example, you know, my mom will say, you know, oh, I'm forgetting things a lot. But I mean, the example that happens between us, I mean, I'm just as bad, right? I'm forgetting stuff all the time too. So I'm like, am I already starting to have problems? Or I'm trying to give my mom context and say like, hey mom, it's happened like that. What you're complaining about happens to everybody. It's not, you know, it might not be you getting any worse. It just might be that you think it is, but it's happening to everybody. Like, is that a problem that people kind of self perpetuate in their older age?
We're actually learning quite a bit about how to prevent Alzheimer's disease and dementia, and it's looking more hopeful right now because the entire neurology psychiatry coalition that works with Alzheimer's disease is moving, and cardiology is very much ahead of it, is moving to prevention strategies starting in the early 50s, in midlife. And that has to do with understanding of how cardiovascular risk factors work. Reduction, like in obesity is one thing, you know, and where GLP-1s and other things are coming in. But also understanding that exercise and movement are essential for brain. In my studies, contributed to that. When you move, you grow gray matter volume and also reduce your stress and improve your memory. Once you stop moving, it goes downhill from then on. So immobility in older adults is an issue that can be dealt with more effectively with physical therapy. Visual and hearing problems can be corrected and reversed. There are reversible causes of a cognitive decline. So we know at least 14 at this point that can be helpful. Gut health and what helps gut health relationship to cognition. Genetic predisposition we understand much better. But again, you know, what we understand now, you have to do a lot of things to help yourself when you get older. You know, there's an expression, aging is not for sissies. So you have to be prepared. What I'm advocating for, and we wrote a paper about it, is that brain health has to be cultivated from early childhood, in utero even, because a lot of those factors are contributing to Alzheimer's disease are starting to count in utero when, like, for example, blood babies before they're born at 9 months of gestation have 20% higher risk of heart disease. before they're born. And that is because of mom's health or exposure to toxicities or abuse. Early childhood has own risk factors that will then later, 50 years later, will contribute to the risk of Alzheimer's disease. What we're calling for, and I am one of the leaders of this movement, Brain Health Across Lifespan, but it requires a really the entire world, and the world is coming together, actually, understanding this. I had a Brain Health Summit at UCLA where a lot of scientists came, but also lawmakers. And so there's a push to change laws that emphasize brain health in early childhood. Spirituality, meditation, Tai Chi, and yoga breathing practices can be ingrained in younger children to become tools of coping. So we could teach resilience via breathing practices, stress reduction and breathing practices. When they are faced, young children and young people are faced with stress, they would have a tool like hold the breath or breathe 3 second inhale, 3 second hold, 3 second exhale, 3 second hold. Or sighing, for instance, just sighing for a minute or two would improve your self-regulation. Simple things like that, they should be taught to young children. But it's never too late. Even your mom can benefit from it.
Yeah, exactly.
She should be moving. She should be distressing. Yeah. She should be experiencing joy, you know, all sorts of things.
I think I'm going to get her your book, and that's probably a good starting point. But
you can understand it because my mom, I mean.
Oh, yeah, no, she will. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, she will. So so I saw some studies about cholesterol being important for dementia. Now, I always get dementia and what's the other one again? Alzheimer's, kind of. Like in my head, they're the same thing, but I know they're not. But I can't remember if the studies are which one they're referencing. But is there any new
Alzheimer's disease is a portion of dementia. There are other types of dementia.
They share
common risk. Lifestyle factors like sleep, exercise, diet, spirituality would be one of the things.
Yeah.
It is useful for everything, you know.
Yeah. What about cholesterol? For people were saying that, you know, that people need more cholesterol than they thought to help with dementia, or that is that real, or is that just like memes on the internet?
Right. Well, you know, beware internet.
Yeah, I know.
But there's a truth to that. That cholesterol is needed for brain health, and maybe the story was. Cholesterol lowering medications vis-a-vis dementia or Alzheimer's disease is not all straightforward, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Cholesterol is important in terms of one of the risk factors for cardiovascular disease and cerebrovascular disease. Diet and exercise, lifestyle factors are probably primary before you take any drugs. You know, you have to try to optimize your diet.
What about the 3-day sardine fast? I heard that's magical. I heard that's got like magical benefits. Like literally.
And what happened?
Wait, the canned sardines? This can't be good for you.
Three day sardine fast. Apparently they have the right amount of like healthy fats and protein and all this stuff that it magically like fixes dementia like symptoms.
Oh, so this is one thing I'm starting to say in different interviews. Magical thinking will not get you anywhere, you know. There's not a silver bullet. It's a combination of things over a longer period of time that would lead to prevention. And that's what I'm saying, you know, the earlier you start, the better it is. Yeah. I mean, I do send people to Costco to buy fish oil, if that's what you're after, because it's a fairly good brand and cheap enough, you know, because fish oil, if you try to buy it as a supplement, it can be very expensive.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that's fascinating. I was just sort of half kidding. I'm mainly kidding about that, but I did want to ask to see if you'd heard about it because it did sound
interesting. But I will look it up.
Yeah.
So I just got a thing today that someone wants to come on the show that says fasting is bullcrap.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. But, no, well, this wouldn't be true fasting. It's a sardine fast. You're eating.
Right. That's not a fast. It's a cleanse. It's a sardine cleanse. But are they canned sardines? This can't.
Yeah. Oh yeah, canned sardines.
Nah, you can't just eat canned sardines.
It's only 3 days. Sardines. 3 days. 72 hours. You know.
Yeah, I prefer watermelon.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been buying watermelon lately. I would not
eat sardines from the can. Yeah. I mean, if you can find freshwater sardines, that cold water sardines that are not without mercury, that would be great. You know, but they sometimes it's very hard to find them. You have to travel to Italy to get them.
I get my flour from Italy.
I was just gonna say, get your flour at the same time.
Just because it's not full of glyphosate. What you mentioned diet, what are sort of the big avoid foods? What are some of the main foods to avoid?
So, you know, whatever is Mediterranean diet or a modification of that is the only diet that has been proven to be preventative and balanced.
Do you think that points to like, because as soon as you said that, that makes me think of that being more of the birthplace of civilization than Africa. It seems like that human sort of came from that diet. If that's the only one we can find, that seems to be the good one. And all the rest, because humans are super adaptable, right? We got Eskimos that can eat all this fat that other people maybe couldn't do in such a way. But because I've heard this from countless people that it always goes back to this Mediterranean diet, which makes me think that that's what we started out with before we overtook the planet.
It's the good fats, you know, like the reason you're recommended to eat sardines is the good fats plus nuts. If you look at the blue zones, diets across blue zones, they vary quite a bit, you know, like Okinawa diet is not the same as in Greece, you know, Greece is more Mediterranean. The one common denominator is nuts. Eating nuts, but it's basically what you are not eating, you know, which is processed carbohydrates and, you know, processed food generally, and a lot of corn oil.
Yeah, like the corn sugar, like corn.
All the seed oils, those aren't as prevalent over there, I feel like. They were bad in the UK. I was kind of surprised at how prevalent they were in England. But I feel like once you get over to Italy and the Mediterranean, it's more olive oil and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and they're not eating a lot of carbohydrates. It's mostly vegetables and fish and lean meats, not a lot of red meat. But again, you know, fast food diet or SEDS, standard American diet, SED diet, is what leads to atherosclerosis and cardiovascular disease. And, you know, all sorts of high cholesterol is a part of it.
What are the best nuts then, the fatty nuts?
Walnuts would be, you know, any nuts that look like a brain, like walnuts, would be good. But all of them have this quality to improve cognition. There are actually studies of nuts and various single foods like avocado and strawberries, and you know, they show some improvement in cognition.
Yeah. Do they have to be organic? Because one of the problems we have in the West is like you have these giant almond mills in California that are just pumping out almonds like crazy, and we've got this sort of food is mass produced to the point where it's like, because now I'm reading stuff where it's like you got to watch the peanuts, peanut butter especially, they're saying is full of I think mold or something was what they were saying, but you got to kind of watch. So do you think organic nuts, like are you getting mostly organic nuts, are you getting sourcing them from a certain spot, or there's some to stay away from?
Well, you know, studies are done not necessarily on organic foods. And some organic matter more than others, you know, like whatever is growing in the ground would be better if it's organic. Something like a banana that has a peel it is less relevant. But, you know, studies that do food, examine food effect on cognition and brain don't necessarily use organic that I know of. They don't claim it.
Hmm. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
What about supplements outside of regular diet? Is there anything that is an important supplement for brain health?
I use a few that have evidence base, and they, so the one thing that about aging, your diet becomes kind of very monotonous. You're not very intensive. It's not full color, vegetable included, rainbow colors. So in that case, it's important to supplement it with B vitamins. But we also can detect levels of vitamin B and D. Vitamin D is very essential for mood and cognition, has been shown in multiple studies relevant to brain health. So the vitamin D levels around 50, it depends on the laboratory, is what I prefer in my patients. And fish oil also in anti-inflammatory inflammatory conditions, I use as anti-inflammatory. But again, there are some risks, so like depending on what other medications you're taking, how much you could take of fish oil. I use ginkgo sometimes. Some studies of ginkgo biloba showed effects. In face of COVID and long COVID, I use adaptogens quite a bit to help people deal with stress. Like ashwagandha and American ginseng and others.
What about lion's mane and some of the mushrooms? Yeah.
Yes, I have people with long COVID on my lion's mane because they have a lot of brain fog and they seem to be responding to that.
Yeah.
We kind of touched on different diets, like even how the Mediterranean one varies a little bit by area. Do you think there's any benefit? I remember watching a documentary a few years ago about how someone was sick with autoimmune disease. And what they did is they changed their diet to, they didn't eat anything that couldn't be sourced, grown, or whatever from outside of like 100 miles from their house. So if it couldn't be produced within 100 miles of their house, they didn't touch it. I think they were using birch trees for sugar, birch syrup for sugar and stuff like this. But they noticed tremendous health benefits in this documentary. So I'm wondering if you've come across any sort of relationship between where you're culturally from, your background. Is your diet sort of tied to where you, your ethnicity? And
or is it where you live currently?
Or is it where you live currently?
Okay, so this is a lot of questions. So let me just answer. I do believe that there's a type associated with your background, ancestral background. And mine is of people who are wandering around, you know, they're
nomadic,
yes, nomadic lifestyle where you don't have always access to food and you tend to store it, you know, regardless of what amount of food you eat, you just store it. And so it also is linked to your blood type. There is a blood type diet that you have to adhere to. And preference for food, like meat and potato kind of diet. And that's true for me. It's Russian ancestry, Eastern European ancestry. But what I discovered was constitutional acupuncture actually distinguishes between ancestral patterns or your metabolism and your preference for food. And it has about 8 or 9 constitutions and it applies different, like you need to follow a particular constitutionally appropriate diet for your predisposition. And that's why I shy away from like a blanket statement for everybody. You need to eat blueberries. Some do, some don't, you know? And you really have to understand your own predisposition and preference. You could look up blood type based diet is pretty accurate to what you need to eat. But also it just explore. I find this exploration is a journey, you know, and that's what I offer my patients with who are struck by long COVID or dementia is to explore things that work for them. And I give them reminders and tools, and I send them to specialists who could help them with it. But it's a personal journey to explore what's good for you. it's rather hard to issue any kind of blanket statement like Western medicine does. You know, American Heart Association recommends this, you know, and it's good. It should be good for 100% of people. No, it's not.
Yeah.
What about local, like Graham mentioned, where you're living now? I think the biggest
example, yes.
Yeah, the big example for that one is like the, I think what they were doing was giving people honey that was made locally, and it was helping out with local pollen allergies.
It's true. You know, locally, eating locally always saves you from products being stored for months somewhere in the warehouse and losing any nutritional value or vitamins content. So your microbiome is dependent on what you eat endemically, you know, like around you. And you could help it feel better if you just feed it with the products that are surrounding you.
Is there anything from your book that we should get to? Anything from your book, Living from the Soul, the Neuroscience of Spiritual Awakening, that we kind of missed or that we should talk about?
Sort of provides information about why it's good for you to know your soul and how to connect with it. It gives a lot of exercises for self-regulation. It shows how, for instance, there's a lot of trauma-based therapies, and people are very interested in trauma right now. So I provide a view from the soul. What is trauma? And how to deal with this from the soul's perspective, how to deal with technology or psychedelics from the soul's perspective. And it's not how you interpret it generally. It's basically a zoom out to look at it from a bird's view and whether it's good for you or not, you know, and it could be good for you at some points, but not always. So it just provides a different point of view of how to live from your authentic soul. Is your authentic self, your authentic essence. And first of all, we are born and then programmed by our families and environments and schools and churches and government, not knowing ourselves, who we really are. And knowing your soul is the journey of discovery of who you really are.
Yeah, nice. Wow.
Excellent. Helen, is there anything that we didn't ask you that we should have?
I think we're good. You know, I followed your inquiry because, you know, it's your program and you have a viewership that has certain questions, I guess. So I follow your questions.
Is there anything people should know before we wrap up? Is there anything you want to let our audience know to help, you know, obtain this sort of lifestyle and spiritual level and all that sort of stuff that just feel like they're stuck in the grind and the rotation and the Monday to Friday, whatever it is?
Yeah, I do want to, this book empowers people to know what they want or need from their own perspective, not looking out. Like, for example, ChatGPT is a new authority or a guru. Do you really need it? How about you meditate for a couple of minutes and ask your soul what is good for me? Or finding muscle testing is your intuition. Is this product good for me, for my body? You know, is that diet good for me? What should I do next? Ask yourself, basically, you know, not Google it. Don't listen to anybody else outside the authority. Just ask your own intuition.
Soul GPT.
Good point. I should use it.
You could use it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Where can people get the book? Helen, where can they follow your work? Do you have any social media or websites or anything like that? Of course, we'll put it all in the show notes, but we do encourage people to give the URLs out here for the people that never make it to the show notes.
Right. So I have a website, drhelenlavretsky.com, and a book can be purchased on all booksellers, including Amazon. And my website has information where to purchase. It's available in ebook and audiobook as well.
Oh, awesome. Good.
Awesome. Helen Lavretsky, this has been great. Thank you for coming on the show and sharing your work with us. This has been great. We appreciate it. We encourage all our listeners to get the book, to check it out, and come back anytime. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks. Take care.
Last thing I will mention is your it does upload in the background. You're only at around 83%. So I'm going to remove you from the call, but could you just leave the browser open until that gets to 100%?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And that was our chat with Helen Lavretsky. What'd you think?
That was fascinating. I'm super fascinated by this. I'm going to, get that book for my mom, maybe even me. Being in my mid 50s, you know, I got to start this resilience training against dementia.
There you go. The demented gram. We don't want demented gram in Grimerica. That'll make it tricky, but also kind of fun. It would be kind of fun if I could just like poke around at you and make you believe false pass, things like that. Big thanks to Helen for coming on the show. Big thanks to you guys for listening. Even bigger thanks, of course, if you are one of our supporters. The show is listener supported, no ads, none of that stuff. So head over to grimerica.ca/support if you can, when you can, sign up for a monthly or make a one-time donation to help keep the show going, help make sure we get to 1,000 episodes. I think this is like 774, something like that. So we're getting close. Of course, check out grimericaoutlaw.ca for the podcast. Contact at thecabin.com for trips and events. Adultbrain.ca for over 250 audiobooks. Simulationmaps.com for our map package. And a couple new things coming out after a big launch tomorrow. This is coming out today, Tuesday, August 11th. So tomorrow we are launching the Grimoire, our secret teachings book club, esoteric book club. So if you want to tune in for that, it'll be on our YouTube channel tomorrow at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time.
Audiobook
Brain, Grimerica Audiobook Club. That's right. Audiobook Club. Other than that, we love you guys. Thanks for listening. And we will see you next week.
So many cigarettes.